After wishing everyone good morning, it's still in the morning. We're on Daf Mem Ches at the very beginning of Perek Vamet Tomnin, and we're up to Velo B'Teven. So let's just see where in the Gemara we're up to. Again, depending upon what kind of Gemara you have, it's approximately, I would say, just guessing, about 12 lines down from the top. And we go back to our Mishnah, and the Mishnah has a list of materials that you're not allowed to use for insulation on Erev Shabbos because it's a Davar HaMosif Hevel. And on the list we have Teven. Let's see, Ein Tomnim, we have Lo B'Gefes, V'lo B'Zevel, V'lo B'Melach, V'lo B'Siv, V'lo B'Chol, V'lo B'Teven. Correct? V'lo B'Teven. Just one second. Just one second. It says the following. Let's read it again. It says, Lo B'Gefes, Lo B'Zevel, Lo B'Melach, Lo B'Sid, Lo B'chol, Bein Lachin, Ubein Yevashim. So in the above mentioned list, the Isra Atman applies even Yevashim. But then it says, V'lo B'Teven, etc. B'Zman She'im Lachin. So Teven is straw, and straw, when it insulates, and we're worried about adding heat, that's only because it is damp, it's wet, it's moist. But if it's Yevashim, then it doesn't add any heat. And that's Teven. And Teven is first on a list, and that includes Zogin. Zogin is, right, that's a pasuk in the parsha of Nazir. Zog is the outside peel of a grape, which I guess if you dry them, then they can be totally dry. But if you don't dry them and you leave them a little bit damp, then they have the propensity of being Mosif Hevel. And then we have some sort of a grass over here, which is called Asavim. And as well, we have something called a Mochin. Mochin in my modern Hebrew is called cotton. And apparently, you can actually use some sort of cotton. Maybe it's a different kind of natural cotton that you know when you take it off the bushes, and it has the ability to insulate something if it's dry. No, I'm sorry, if it's damp. I meant to say if it's damp. Boy mine Rav Ado Bar Masna Me'abaye Mochin Shetoman Bohen Maulitaltalon Bishabis. So let's try to understand what the Gemara is talking about here. The assumption is that Toman Bohen. So he insulated food on Erev Shabbos with Mochin. Now, the question that I want to ask is, number one, are you allowed to do so? So let's assume, for argument's sake, they were dry. So he didn't violate any Iser in the Atmana itself, if that's a fair premise for the time being. However, we have a different problem, and that's a mukta problem. So let's just think about the basics of mukta. Mukta, in its primary form applies to what's called Eitzim V'Avonim, which means wood or stones. These are materials that have no function whatsoever on Shabbos, and therefore it's Muktzah. In fact, even according to Rab Shimon, who allows Muktzah, that's only in something that has a function in and of itself, but you put it aside, and you decided not to use it on Shabbos. So Rab Shimon says it's not Muktzah, because it has a function. But Eitzim V'Avonim has no function. So I'm going to assume at this particular moment, and I hope I'm right, we'll see if the sugya supports my assumption, is that mochin is also mukta in and of itself. It's not a kli, it's not a beged, it's in its very natural form. It's what you call a raw material. Normally, what you do is with cotton, you subject it to an entire processing in order to make it worthy to be used as cotton, and perhaps to make it into a beged, into a cloth. Here we're dealing with something that's intrinsically muktzah. It doesn't have a shem kli. It's mochen in its natural state. However, he decides that he wants to use mochen for hatmana. And again, assuming it's dry, he's allowed to do so. So let's say you were to take Eitzim V'Avonim in a way that it would not be Mosif Hevel, and you put your pot inside Eitzim V'Avonim to insulate the pot. Would that mean that therefore you have designated the Eitzim V'Avonim for a purpose? It has now a function. And if you do so on Erev Shabbos, you remove the status of Muktzah, because it's no longer Eitzim V'Avonim. You know, you're using it for, in this case, insulating your food. So, for example, and this is a common issue in Muktzah, let's say on Erev Shabbos I take a stone and I put it at the opening of my door as a doorstop, and it keeps the door from closing. And then I decide I want to move this stone. So even though Eitzim is Avonim is a classic Muktzah, but here in this case, since I designated for a purpose and for use on Erev Shabbos, it's no longer Muktzah. And in this case, since I designated the Mochin for purposes of Hatmana in a way that it's Mutter, then I remove the status of Muktzah from these Mochin. That was the question that Rav Ada posed to Abaye. Now, after we see Abaye's response, then I think we'll be ready to come back and understand why Rav Ada vacillated on this question. Amale. So Abaye responds to Rav Ada with a kind of a question. You know, one good question deserves another. V'chi mipnei she'ein lo kupa shel teven omed u'mafkir kupa shel mochin. So it sounds to me the following, that if things were normal, he would find a different way of insulating his pot. And that would be called a kupa shel teven, a box of straw. Apparently it was more common to take straw and put it in a box and then put a pot of meat or whatever tavshil he has into this box full of straw. And that would insulate it. Unfortunately, he doesn't have access to a kupa shel teven, and he falls back to the position of using mochin. So Abaye basically is wondering why Rav Ada had any problem with this. It would seem obvious. Just one second. So, Rav Osai, here we have to introduce another variable into the equation. In order to remove a shame mukta from Eitzim Vavonim, we need to designate something as a kli. In other words, although I'm a little bit unsure about this, because if I remember correctly, the Gemara is going to say later on that if you have a stone, a very large stone, and you designate it for sitting on the stone on Shabbos, let's say if there's going to be some sort of outdoor lecture, and you don't have enough chairs, so you designate stones for sitting, I think the Gemara is going to say that that's not mukta, even though the stones are not a kli. So I realize that what I'm about to tell you now is very tenuous, and it has to be reconciled with other sugyas. But nevertheless, with a great deal of chutzpah, I'm going to suggest the following: that it's not just enough to take an evan, a stone, and designate it for a purpose, and therefore remove mukta. You've got to go one step beyond that. You have to give it a shem kli. And what does that mean, a shem kli? Kli is something that's permanent. I'll give you an example. The Gemara says elsewhere in Masechet Shabbos that if you have something called an orig, aleph resh yud gimel, which means it's a small piece of cloth, and the question is whether or not it has the status of a kli, if it's sholosh al sholosh etzbaos, which is a very small cloth, then if you designate it as a patch to put over a rip in your clothing, then it does have a shame kli. But the Gemara says it all depends on what you do with this arig. If you lock it up in a kupa, you tie it up and put it into a drawer or a box, that indicates that you have long-term use for that, pardon the expression, for that rag, that, you know, that piece of cloth. But if, on the other hand, you know, you use it once to wipe up a surface, or I don't know, to plug up a vessel, and then you throw it on the floor afterwards, then it doesn't have a shame kli. Why? Because it's lacking permanence. You have to designate it for permanent use. Now, I don't know exactly what permanence means. Is it means once, twice, thrice? I don't know how many times, but you're going to reuse the object. If you're not going to reuse it, you're going to just throw it into the rubbish bin, then it doesn't have a shame kli. And that's no geira kabbalas tuma, but we're going to apply the same logic to mukta. So we're going to say that if you have these natural balls of cotton, you know, straight off the tree, that's called mochin, and they haven't been processed yet, then the fact that you, in a desperate situation, want to use them to insulate your pot, that doesn't remove the shame mukta, because you haven't indicated, as you would in the case of kupa shel teven, that you want to reuse this cotton for purposes of insulation on a long-term basis. Again, you're desperate now because you don't have access to a kupa shel teven, and therefore, you have no choice. But if you ask me, would you give any value, so to speak, to this mochin? I don't know what you have it in. You know, a collection of mochin. You know, it's your personal collection. You know, your mochin collection. The answer is that you don't give it any long-term permanent significance. You're going to throw it out. You're going to use it just this Shabbos, and that's it. Next Shabbos, you don't even use it. It's not like a kupa shel teven, which is designated for long-term use as a method of insulation. So again, what I'm suggesting is that if someone uses a material for insulation, but it's really worthless, then it still remains mukta. It still has the status of Eitzim Avonim. So even though in this particular scenario, where he has no teven, he is desperate and he uses mochin, that doesn't justify the status of the mochin as ois mukta, as a kli of some sort, as an object of value. It doesn't have a status as an object of value if he's only using it on a temporary basis because he finds himself desperate. Now, if that shot is correct, let me see if I can read this into the language of Abaye. Abaye says the following. V'chi mipnei she'ein lo kupa shel teven omed umafkir kupa shel mochin. Not sure exactly what he means by mafkir. Let's just see Rashi. Rashi says omed umafkir lekach kupa shel mochin. Shedomer Yikorin ain derech bekach velo botli lehatmona. Rashi is certainly adding some other element into the equation, not the way I presented it. So let's see the previous Rashi. Mochin ainon el lasus mihem levodim shekorin falter. Umuktzim heim lemalacha v'asal etaltalon v'ilu v'elu shetoman bahem miamrinon yichdon latmona v'ika toras klialein umutal etaltalon v'shabbos olo. Okay, so Rashi has a different pshat, although I think there's one or two elements of our interpretation that Rashi does accept. Primarily, Rashi's saying that to remove the Isur Tiltal and the Isur Mukta, Rashi does insist that it has to have a shame Kli. Do you see that in Rashi? V'ika Toras Kli Alehen. And The other element in this equation, which is our pshat, which Rashi accepts in the suffix of Rav Ada, is Rav Ada is vacillating as to whether or not designating these mochin for purposes of atmana would be enough, would be sufficient to generate a shem kli. However, from now on, Rashi departs from our interpretation.
It seems like it's a temporary designation, not a designation that would be permanent.
Right, that's what I was suggesting. But Rashi is not like what we said, that, you know, this is basically garbage, so to speak, and it deserves to be put in the rubbish bin, but since he's desperate to use it, does that itself allow it to have a shem kli? And the question is, it's not permanent, it's only on a one-time shot basis. That's the way we interpret it. Rashi says no. Katan is not garbage. On the contrary, he says punkfakeret. The problem that Rav Ada is having with this mochin is that the mochin is something very expensive. It's something very valuable. Why is it valuable? Because if you process it in the proper way, then what you make from it is called levadim. Now, I can't translate that into English because I'm not a French expert. Rashi gives me the French translation, falter. So if somebody knows French, I know we have at least one Canadian in the audience, though two Canadians maybe, or people who lived in Canada. So I'm not sure exactly what falter is, but I suspect that falter is processed cotton that could be used to make clothing from. And apparently, back in the day, that was considered a chashivus. That was not something cheap. Now, what happens is the following. We have something that's called muktzah l'malachton. Again, a whole new element that Rashi introduces into this equation here, vervada. And that is that if you designate something for manufacturing, meaning you're going to subject this raw material to a process which requires a great deal of malacha, a great deal of manufacturing, and at the end of the day, from something that's raw material, you're going to create something of value, then, on the contrary, that makes it muktzah. Not muktzah because, like I said, it ate some avonim, you want to throw it into the rubbish bin, but on the contrary, muktzah because you don't want to get rid of this. You don't want to use it for any secondary purpose. Because if you do so, then you're wasting raw material that could be used for a much more sophisticated and expensive product that you can create as a result of a manufacturing process. That's called muktzah l'malachton. And Rashi says, as a result of its muktzah l'malachton, it's aser betiltul. Now the question is, can you take something that's muktzah l'malachton and designate it for a different purpose, a different use, that by far is inferior? In other words, if all things were equal, the last thing in your mind would be to use a ball of cotton for insulation. For that, you use a cheap material, which is called tevin. But what happens is, and here's where Rashi overlaps with our pshat, he doesn't have access to a kupa shel tevin, and he has no choice but to use a very potentially expensive item, which is mochin, for hatmana purposes. And the question is, does that salvage, so to speak, save this mochin out of the clutches of muktzah and upgrade the mochin to the status of a kli, and therefore removes the iser muktzah? I mean, Rabosai, you're beginning to see that the overlap here between the dinim of hatmana that we spent a day or two on and the law of muktzah is purely coincidental, meaning there's a very weak link here that leads you from hatmana to muktzah. It just happens to be that in this case of mochin, which is a material used, if need be, for hatmana, we have a shail of muktzah. Normally, he would not use mochin for hatmana. That would be a stupid thing to do financially, because you could use mochin for something much more expensive. But in this particular scenario, he has no choice. He doesn't have the cheap material, which is called tevin, and therefore he's going to use a more waste, if I can use that term, a more expensive, potentially, material named mochin, and waste it, so to speak, on hatmana. And now, in a sense, he is really not making a major decision. Now, you see, I'm missing one piece of the puzzle. If anybody can figure this out in Rashi, what happens after he uses this clump of mochin for purposes of atmana? What does he do with it afterwards? Now, I'm going to throw out a possibility here, and you'll laugh at me, and maybe what I'm saying is totally ridiculous, but what the heck, you only live once, so we'll give it a try. And I'm going to suggest that what he's going to do after Shabbos is he's going to pull out these mochin and he's going to reuse them a second time around for his manufacturing process. He's going to send it to the factory in order to produce cotton garments, which means that his use for Atmana is only a temporary use. And therefore, Abai responds with a rhetorical question. He says, is he going to be mafkir, a kupa shel mochin? Is he going to make it hefkir, so to speak? Is he really going to consider it worthless insulation material? For certainly not. He's not going to waste it on insulation. And therefore, it still retains its original status as muktzeh l'melachton, the way Rashi interprets it. Meaning his hope and his plan is still to utilize these balls of cotton to make, let's say, falter out of it. Whatever falter is. If you can research that in your French dictionary, I would appreciate that. Or if you don't have a French dictionary, but you have a classical Talmud Bavli, take a look in the back in the Metargim, which I don't have now. And you'll tell me what this falter is, and I hope it's something that is a cotton garment of some sort. And the Gemara goes on and says, Lema Misayale. Perhaps we have a brisa to support Abaye's response to Rav Ada. Tomnim Begizei Tzemer Ubitzipe Tzemer Ubilshonos Shel Argamon. Umochit. Now these are various materials that you're allowed to use for hatmana, which means that it's not a davar hamosif hevel. So we have shearings from wool, we have wool that was combed and you use it for mats, we have strips of purple wool, and finally we have mochin. But then the Braisa concludes and says, V'ein metaltelin osan. It means that all these materials, even though you've designated them for the purpose of hatmana, nevertheless they retain their status of muktza, because each one of these materials, or at least in the case of mochin for sure, it is designated for something more expensive and more valuable, and you would not waste it on insulation, and therefore it does not acquire a shame kli simply by virtue of the fact that you're using it for hatmana. So these words, ein metaltelin osan, really prove that we're on the right track here, that Abaye was responding to Rav Ada by telling Rav Ada that these mochin are still muktza, and therefore ein metaltelin osan. The Gemara rejects this. Imishum ha lo ira, hochi kamar. Imlo Taman Bohem ain't metaltelin osan. He never actually used them for insulation. So what is the Braisa telling me? That it's not that it still remains muktza. What was Av meaning that it's not muktza? He never actually used it. Mao did Tame, I might have thought. Chazi Lemizga Alayu. In other words, he could use it as a pillow. Kamash Balon, the Braisa says, no, that's not so. It's muktzeh l'melachton. You would not waste it on using it as a pillow. Again, even though after you use it as a pillow, presumably you can use it l'melachton, but nevertheless, it's still designated l'melachton. It doesn't lose its status as muktzeh insofar as it's designated for its melacha. Now let's take a minute of time to ask the following question. If something is designated for a malacha, why is it muktza? And the answer, I believe, is called a klisha malachta le'isur. That amongst the various categories of muktza, we have something that's designated for isur. In other words, it could only become ro'i if you do a malacha. Like, for example, let's say you had a stick of wood, and you want to make it into an arrow, and you would take a knife and you would sharpen the end, right, one tip, and you would use it as an arrow. It still remains muktzah until you make it into an arrow, even though it's designated as an arrow, But that doesn't matter. You need a malacha in order to make it into an arrow. You have to do a malacha in order to change its form. And any object that in its natural form is not usable, it's Eitzim V'Avonim, even if you designate it for some use, but in order to achieve that use and take the Eitz and make it functional, you'll have to do a malacha that still retains its status of Muktzah. So let me change my mind. I said before that these mochin have the status of muktzah machmas, machmas isur, or what we call muktzah machmas malach. I don't think you have to say that. All I think you have to say is that in its present state, it has no function, because you have designated it for a function of that would be appropriate after the process of manufacturing, and that's called muktzah, because you need a malach in order to remove the status of muktzah and make this into something functional. Now, Rav Chisda shara ladure udra lebeisadya b'shabasa. So Rav Chisda allowed on Shabbos taking this mochin stuff, these cotton balls, and putting it into a pillow on Shabbos. Now, I'm not sure what he means by le'ahadure. It sounds to me, and maybe I'm way off the mark here, is that originally this cotton was actually inside a pillow, and it fell out. And now he wants to replace it. And Rashi later on is going to explain that the Issa that we're dealing with here is Tikkun Mana, which means Makav Epatish. And what happens is, once the mochin fall out of the pillow, the pillow is no longer functional, and now he's putting it back together again. And that's called Makav Epatish. Says Rav Chisda, we're allowed to do it. And the Gemara is going to now reject Rav Chisda based on the fact that we have here a Makav Epatish. Now, I'm going to suggest the following possibility, and once again, this is very tenuous, that the reason why Rav Chisda would have allowed such a thing is because it doesn't require any umnus. You're not fastening something in a permanent way by tying, screwing in a bolt, if you know what I mean, or knocking in a nail. You're just simply taking the cotton and stuffing it back in. Anybody could do that. That's not called a malacha. It's not what's called meleches machsheves. Eisvei Rav Chanan bar Chisda, Rav Chisda. I'm not sure if this is a son who's asking a kasha to his father, but in any event, we find this throughout Shas, that a son argues against his father. It's not a violation of of Mora Aviv. We have a brisa that says Matirin Beis Hatzavar B'Shabbos Avalo Poschin. So in the old days, they used to wear something that we call today a poncho, if I'm not mistaken, which means that you cut out, first you produce a square or a rectangular piece of cloth, and then what you do is you cut out a middle section for the head, and then you wear it as a garment. Now, what they used to do was they used to tie down that piece. In other words, maybe they didn't exactly sever it from the garment, so that square in the middle was tied down to the outskirts of that cutout, if you follow what I mean. And this brisa is going to differentiate between the following. Matirin beis hatzavar v'shabbos avalo poschim. You're allowed to unfasten that opening, that neck opening, on Shabbos. But let's say you had never actually opened it. It was one solid garment. If you punch a hole in that garment, you cut out a hole, then you violate the Iser of Makir v'Patish, because a solid garment is not usable, it's not wearable until you cut out that middle section. Okay, fine. Then the Brisa says, V'einosnin es hamochin lo betoch hakar v'lo betoch hakeses b'yontov. So we have different types of pillows over here. One is called kar and one is called keses. I think one was smaller, one was larger. But in any event, it could be also we're dealing with a what do you call it when you sleep on something? Not a pillow, but a mattress. And in modern Hebrew, they use the word kar to refer to a mattress as well. And the question is, are you allowed to stuff this mattress with these, these balls of cotton? And the Braisa prohibits it. Now, on Yontif, we're a little bit more lenient in general because of what's called Meleches Ochel Nefesh. But I guess in this case, there's no way that you can connect this to Ochel Nefesh. And therefore, the Braisa wants to tell you that even on Yontif, this is prohibited. And again, I'm assuming it comes under Makir v'Patish, or Tikkun Mana, which is identical with Makir v'Patish, that you're fixing up a utensil. So the Braisa wants to tell me that even on Yontif, you're not allowed to put these stuffings back into the pillow. And it goes without saying that on Shabbos, that's osur. So how could Rav Chisda allow it? So lo kashya, the Gemara says, that's not a problem. Ha b'chadati, ha b'atike. In other words, when are you considered in violation of Tikkun Mana? That's when you start creating something that didn't exist. If you have old pillows and the stuffing in the pillow fell out, then you're not considered to be creating a new utensil or fixing up a utensil by putting the stuffing back into the pillow. And again, we added the proviso that it's not a Maisa Uman. It doesn't require some sort of fastening. But in a case of Charity, the Bryce is addressing a case where you've never had a pillow to begin with, you've never had a mattress to begin with, and you create this mattress or this pillow by placing the stuffing inside of them, that's considered Makir v'Patish. Now this reminds me, by sheer association, of a sugya called Ein Binyan B'Kelim. And the Gemara differentiates later on in Masechet Shabbos between creating a kli as opposed to putting together the pieces of a kli. So you had a kli. The Gemara has an example called a mita shel prakim, and it was made up of different parts. And you attach the parts together, and then you take it apart. It's like etch-a-sketch, not etch-a-sketch. What's it called? Those construction games that the kids play with. You know, where you put pieces together, and then you take them apart and put them together again. Well, Lego, sort of a Lego kind of thing. So the Gemara says that that's not a Meleches Binyan, because you already had the kli, and now you're just reassembling the kli. But the Gemara seems to assume that if you would put together a kli from the get-go, like for example they had a case of a shovel and you have to attach a pole, I don't know, I'm looking for a word here, to a shovel, right? You have to, you have a hole in a shovel and then you put the, you put the handle, oh that's the word I wanted to use, the handle. You attach the handle to the shovel. So that's called binyan v'kelim, because then you're creating a brand new kli. So this Gemara sort of reminds me of that distinction, because there's charity and there's atiki. So if you already had a pillow and the stuffing in the pillow fell out, and then you're just putting back the stuffing, that would be allowed on Shabbos. But if you're creating a pillow that was never created, thank you, then that would be us. Tanya Namiachi, we learned this in a Braisa. And it says, "Einosinus amochin lo l'tocha kar lo l'tocha keses biyontiv v'ein tzorch lom v'shabbos." So what does this brisa add to the previous brisa? It's identical. The answer is, nashru, if the stuffing fell out, machzirin osam v'shabbos v'ein tzorch lomar biyontiv. So that last part of the brisa, the Sefer really supports Rav Chisda, because Rav Chisda was talking about returning. Oh, now we go back to the word le'adure. Remember, I was questioning, you know, why Rav Chisda in his formulation, his ruling, added the word le'adure. Now we see that the word le'adure is absolutely critical. It's only because you already had the stuffing inside the pillow and you're just replacing it. That's why Rav Chisda was matir it. And that, in the language of the Braisa, is called nashru. Now we go back to the case of that poncho that we spoke about before. Haposeach beis hatzavar b'shabbos. Now in the Brice it says you're not allowed to do that, but Rav is adding chayav chatas. He is violating a malacha d'oraisa, and he's chayav chatas. Now we could subsume this case under one of two alternative malachos. Either he's chayav for makah v'patish, in the sense that this is the last act in the manufacture of the poncho. He needs to cut out the, you know, the opening to put his head into. Or alternatively, he might be chayav for maleches korea, for ripping a garment. Now normally ripping a garment would be considered mekalkel, but if you do it for a constructive purpose, then korea is in fact one of the various malachas, one of the 39 malachas. There's also another possibility that comes to my mind, and that's called gozes. Now gozes classically is when you shear the wool off the back of a sheep, but it could be that any sort of cutting of any sort of material might come of the gozes. We have to know more about that malach. Maskif law, Rav Kahana, and here we're going to turn to Daf Mem Ches Amid Beis. Ma Bein Zu Limagufas Chavis. So this is sugya later on in Shabbos. It's also a sugya at the beginning of Masechta Makis. And we have a barrel, and you plaster the lid down to the barrel. And what you're allowed to do is, you're allowed to disassemble the lid, you know, and remove the lid from the top of the barrel. And the Gemara equates this with the Beis HaTzavar, because before he removes the Beis HaTzavar, then he's talking about one continuous piece of cloth. And the Beis HaTzavar, which he's cutting out now, is connected to the rest of the cloth. Here too, the Magufa is connected to the Chavis. The Magufa is referring to the what do you call it, concrete or plaster that attaches the lid to the Chavis, to the barrel. Don't equate these two cases. In the case of a Beis HaTzavar, you have one continuous piece of material, and you're opening it up, and that's called whatever it's called. We'll call it Makah V'Patish. But in the case of a lid, the lid itself is a separate entity from the Chavis. And it's not a Chibur. Meaning that act of magufa, meaning of of sealing it down and attaching it, that's only a kind of a you know, a temporary basis. And when you take off the covering, then you're not really removing something of chibur, and that's why it's not considered a malacha. So again, you might ask, even though the lid was cemented down to the barrel, but nevertheless, Rashi says it was done for the express purpose of removing the lid from the barrel. So it's like something that goes on and goes off. It's not a chibur. It's not a permanent part of the barrel. The lid is separate from the barrel, and he's allowed to remove the lid from the barrel. The fact that right now is plastered down to the barrel, that doesn't mean that it's a chibur. It doesn't become part of the barrel, because the purpose of attaching it was just to, you know, temporarily protect the contents of the barrel, but then to remove the seal. So if you have a seal that's only temporary, you're allowed to remove that seal. So when you cut that umbilical cord, you know, connecting the lid with the barrel, that's not called creating a utensil. Yeah, somebody was...
Yeah, is that like opening a can on Shabbat?
So let's think about it. Before we get to your case of a can, let me give a simpler case. We have, you know, bottle caps that twist on. That for sure would be mutter. Now again, I'm not getting into other issues about the ring. You know, let's leave that out. I mean, that's a whole different discussion. But certainly, if you would tie down a bottle cap, even if you tie it very tightly, you're allowed to open that, because that's like this magufas hachovis. Now you're asking, Sammy, about a more complicated question, and that is opening a can. And the reason why I say it's more complicated is because it's very difficult to imagine that the top part of the can is a lid that was plastered down to the can itself. Now, what I would need here is a field trip to the manufacturing plant, so to speak. What exactly happens? Obviously, you have to get the contents of the can into the can, so at some point, I guess you'd have to assume that the lid was added on afterwards. But I don't know, it's a little bit difficult for me, because when I think about it, the can has a, you know, it's a very permanent chibur, you know, which attaches, you know, attaches the opening of the can to the can itself.
But it's made to open.
Right, but it's made to open, but nevertheless it's a chibur, meaning we need two conditions. Number one, it's got to be made to open, and number two, it's not a chibur, you have two separate items. So let's say, for example, if I produced a cloth and, you know, I made a proclamation that the reason for this cloth, this rectangular cloth, is because I'm going to puncture a hole, you know, to put your head through, it would still be awesome because it's a chibur. We have to have two conditions. It's got to be two separate entities that were attached. And number two, they were only attached together on a temporary basis with the full intention of separating them. So that's why opening cans on Shabbos, in my mind, becomes more of a problem. Again, I'm not saying we can't do it. You know, you might have to do it in a way that's a kilkul, if you follow what I mean. So I'm not sure if opening cans would fit into magufas hachovis, because you might have an added problem here of chibur. Now, if you can somehow convince yourself that in the process of manufacturing there's some separation, you know, between the top part of the can and the rest of the can, I don't believe you could do that, but if you found such a reality, maybe we should talk about something else. What else might we... what other kind of situation... Yeah, let's say you had a perforated opening. I don't have a good example, but let's say, you know those frozen orange juice cans? You know, we have that strip of plastic that you remove it, or other types of lids that have a perforation. And basically, the perforation is already the beginning of the separation between the lid and the can. It's already almost partially removed. Maybe that's...
I'm talking about a lift-off can, you know. Don't pull up the tag or whatever you want to call it.
Oh, I know what you mean. Oh, like the olive cans or whatever. Ah. Yeah. That would be my gufas achavs. That's an excellent case. I was thinking of what we call it tzinsenet, you know, when you go and you get canned food in the canned food section. You know, that might be a problem. But you're right, you know, you're talking about something where they certainly clearly add a cover. They add this lid. They even allow you, you know, to use that ring to pull up the cover. Yeah, or, for example, the other case that I gave about perforated coverings and so forth.
But I don't understand, because Rashi says that Metiz et Roshav Messiah. It doesn't sound like he's opening where there was already an opening. It sounds like he's just taking this thing and cutting it right straight across with a sword.
So what does Rashi mean? Does Rashi mean he's cutting it not where the cement is, or he's cutting it... If Rashi means that he's cutting it, you know, in a place that's below the cement, then you're right. I mean, then the Lechora, that should be a Chibur. Maybe Rashi holds that it's Mekalkel or so, you know, if he doesn't... I don't know. This is a very important point. That requires a lot more research.
Word Métis, it doesn't mean a simple prying open.
No, you're right. You're 1,000% right, Yosef. I'm not questioning you. You're 1,000% right. What I'm asking is, and this I think needs a lot more research, is how does that act of Hatozas Arush indicate that he's simply removing a lid that's cemented on down to a barrel? It sounds like the way Rashi's learning it, that he's actually cutting part of the barrel. And that would be a chibur. I don't know how Rashi's going to get away with that. But you're right. There's something bothering Rashi here in the sugya. I don't know what it is. There's a long Tosus here, Dira Maskev Achi. And it could be that Tosus would address this problem. Now, what time is it? Okay, so let's stop here, and maybe tomorrow I'll be smarter about this Hatozas Arush of Rashi, and let's make a note of where we got up to here on Daf Mem Ches Amid Beis, and we're up to Ramile Rabbi Yirmiya L'Rab Zera. So that's the second line down from the top of Mem Ches Amid Beis. Okay then, so we'll take a break for a second.